We've probably all found ourselves in the midst of lifeless conversation. Perhaps we're at a social event hearing words without feeling any connection to the speaker. Or we may be listening to a Babylonian, a term my friend Kelly Bryson uses to describe people who talk on and on and on. In fact, he says they belong to a self-help group called On and On Anonymous. Vitality drains out of conversations when we lose connection with the feelings and needs generating a speaker's words. This is common when people talk without consciousness of what they're really feeling, needing, or requesting. Instead of being engaged in an exchange of life energy with other human beings, it's easy to experience ourselves as simply wastebaskets for the other person's words. So I think it's real important to know how and when to interrupt a dead conversation to bring it back to life. I suggest the best time to interrupt is when we've heard one word more than we want to hear. The longer we wait, the harder it is to be civil when we do say something. But it's also important that our intention in stopping another person is not to claim the floor for ourselves, but to help the speaker connect with what's alive in them and to connect with what they're really wanting. I do this by tuning into the possible feelings and needs the person has at this moment, even if the feelings and needs are not being expressed through the person's words. Thus, if an aunt is repeating the story about how 20 years ago her husband deserted her with two small children, we might interrupt by saying, "So, Auntie, sounds like you're still feeling hurt and wishing you need for fairness had been met." People are not aware that it is often empathy they are needing, and they don't realize that when they do need empathy, telling the story of what happened in the past is not as likely to get them the empathy as if they talk now about what's still alive in them about that. Another way to bring a conversation to life is to openly express our desire to be more connected and to request information that would help us establish that connection. Once at a cocktail party, I was in the midst of an abundant flow of words that to me, however, seemed lifeless. "Excuse me," I broke in, addressing the group of 9 other people I found myself with. "I'm feeling impatient because I really have a need for connection with you all, but our conversation isn't creating the kind of connection I'd like. I'd like each of you to tell me if the conversation we're having is meeting your needs, and if so, what needs of yours are being met through it." All 9 people stared at me as if I had thrown a rat in the punch bowl. Fortunately, I remembered to tune into the feelings and needs being expressed through their silence. And I empathically reflected, "Are you all feeling annoyed with what I said and needing to continue the conversation?" They all continued to look at me for a short time, and one of the men replied, "No, I'm not annoyed. I was thinking about what you're asking. No, I wasn't enjoying the conversation. In fact, to tell you the truth, I was totally bored with it." At the time, I was surprised to hear his response, because he was the one that was doing most of the talking. But now I'm no longer surprised that the talker can be as bored as anyone else, because I've learned that when conversations are lifeless, the speaker is often not getting what they want any more than anybody else. You may wonder how we can muster the courage to intervene in this way to bring a conversation back to life. I once conducted an informal survey posing the following question. If you are using more words than somebody wants to hear, do you want that person to pretend to listen or to stop you? Of the people I asked this, all but one expressed a preference to be stopped. Their answers gave me courage by convincing me that it's more considerate to interrupt people than to pretend to listen. All of us would like our words to enrich others, not to burden them. One of the hardest messages for many of us to empathize with is silence. This is especially true when we've expressed ourselves vulnerably, and we really need to know how others are reacting to our words. At such times, it's easy to project our worst fears onto the lack of response and forget to connect with the feelings and needs being expressed through the silence. Once when I was working in a business organization, I got in touch with some deep feelings and expressed them, and I started to cry. When I looked up, I received a response from the organization's director that was not easy for me to receive empathically. He was silent, and the look on his face was easy for me to interpret that he was feeling disgusted with me for being so emotional. Fortunately, I remembered to put my attention on what might be going on within him to try to connect with his feelings and needs. And I said, "I'm sensing from your response to my crying that you're feeling disgusted, and my crying doesn't meet your need to have someone in control of himself." If he had answered yes, I would have been able to accept that. We had different values around expressing emotions, without somehow thinking that I was wrong for having expressed my emotions as I did. But he didn't say yes. He replied, "No, no, not at all. I was just thinking of how my wife wishes I could cry." He went on to reveal that his wife, who was in the process of divorcing him, had been complaining that living with him was like living with a rock.